overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change, to create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration Service for the Center of Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
Thank you. I have my little mascot with me. You know, pugs are poorly engineered, if you don't know that. They were raised in China to be emperor's dogs, and they love to sit on silk pillows. And Humphrey is a classic silk pillow kind of a dog. He is royalty. He knows that. He's stubborn as all get out. He was from a puppy mill, I'm sure. When Jody rescued him at the pound, most of his hair had fallen out. He had a lump on his head, a broken tail, an underbite for days, and a nose shoved up his face. And so with all those flaws, he came to me with his beautiful, puggish sort of ways. And for the last 2 weeks, he has been my guru, my teacher. In his vulnerability, he showed me my own inability to rescue to the degree that I would like to rescue. I had to be right there in the trenches when he was shaking and couldn't eat, and he literally didn't poop for 7 days. But I remember it was Tuesday morning. I called Jody because Humphrey, in his painful way of dealing with his adversity, he learned once the surgery was there, he could drag himself on his little weak front legs that curled over. He couldn't put his paws down. He dragged himself off his pee pads into the hallway, and he pushed the poop out of his belly by dragging himself across the floor. I was cheering. It was the happiest moment of my life. So, you know, you never know what's going to bring joy into your life. I would never have in a million years guessed that this would have been the path that I'm on. And it's definitely been a path of the heart, because the head couldn't figure it out. You know, the head wants to understand, but the soul wants to find meaning. So could I find meaning in this beautiful dance that I did with Humphrey? Now, some of you out there might be working. I know Kelly's with her mom, and she's had challenging times. Anytime we're with another, I want to say human being, but even an animal, and they're vulnerable, we get to be that holding space for them, which is a really sacred place to be. Marie was reminding me in our class that's finishing up, we have what they call prompts and practices, little spiritual things that we can do in life to reset ourselves, to align. And she reminded me to just behold the beauty of a tree, to just behold it. And when you behold something that is an expression of the divine, in a strange sort of way, they're holding you. So could we let the trees hold us? I think I'm holding Humphrey. Maybe Humphrey's holding me, you know? He still had his neck. He was paralyzed from the neck down, but he still could love me with his little funny ways. He couldn't put his head down to drink the water, but I could squirt it. So Jody gave me a syringe, and I'd squirt the water in his mouth. He couldn't put his head down to eat his food, but I could hand feed him little pieces of salmon that Trey cooked for him. And so piece by piece, drop by drop, he started to come back. And this morning, he actually stood up. And he looks like a drunken sailor as he's walking, but he actually found his way into the backyard and found a little blade of grass, and he squatted like a girl, but he peed. You know, 2 weeks, and he's doing it. So it's maybe not 6 weeks. Maybe it's... Yesterday was Trey's birthday, February 22nd. He's born on George Washington's birthday. So we have a big painting of George Washington in our den because he is the patron saint of John Stoddard. But on my little Zen calendar yesterday, February 22nd, it said, God realization is nothing but the ability, the expansiveness of the heart, to love everything equally. God realization is nothing but the ability to expand the heart and to love everything equally. So for those of you who are having a dance with God, anybody out there resemble that comment? Know that it's all just about love, to open the heart and to love everything with equanimity, everything. There's a little pussy willow tree out here, and I'm particularly fond of it because when they had the Equality of Marriage Act and they allowed same-sex unions, Mark Moorhead, who was the pianist here before John Miller came, he had stage 4 kidney cancer, and he and his partner got married right up here on that beautiful Saturday morning. They were so choked up, they gagged on their vows. And there was a flower arrangement, and in that flower arrangement were some pussy willow fronds. And wouldn't you know it, they left the flowers at the church and the pussy willow fronds rooted. And so David gave one to Gigi, and I took one home, and Gigi's got so big in her garden, everything she touches grows. So we dug the tree out of her yard, we planted it over here, and she's blooming. She's filled with her little catkins. And so it's something simple like that. A little pussy willow frond. Mark has made his transition, but that lives. So what if in this dance that we do, the little things can mean so much? I based this whole series this month on a book that I will never teach. It's a 500-page book called The Wise Heart, and it's by Jack Kornfield. And Jack Kornfield ends the book by saying, when you follow the path of the heart, you experience what he calls the domain of the four abodes. And those domain of the four abodes from the awakened open heart are loving kindness, compassion, joy, and peace. But he concludes, he said, this loving kindness and this compassion and this joy can lead to attachment. He says, that's why you need the equanimity of peace, where peace will accept everything. Even in those uncomfortable moments, the loving kindness is there. What I went through with Humphrey for the last 2 weeks. In those painful moments when I didn't know if he would live or not, the compassion was there. I held him in my arms and didn't sleep for 3 days. And the joy when he dragged his little body across the floor and he actually could defecate, I never knew such joy. So could we know in the equanimity of peace, when I saw Greg in the hospital before he had his procedure, and he's Mr. Tough Guy. He's strong as an ox and gorgeous as get out, but he was very fragile in that moment. And I can remember saying to Greg, we got to love that little heart of yours. We got to surround it with, you know, warm fuzzies. And what if that's the case? We're not here to fix the world, to change the world. We do these generational healings and they're phenomenal. And I know what they're going to do at Greg's tonight will be phenomenal. But what if we don't really ever really heal? We're a work in progress. We're in kind of a holding kind of experience. You know, we're born whole, but we need each other to be complete. So if I ever get healed or whole, maybe there's no more work for me to do. I need that stuff that arises so that I can love it. That unexamined part of me that Tia discovered this morning, a high school friend was still in her head. In the end of the book, the little just this that we're doing for the class, he gives a beautiful exercise, and I love right-brained exercises. In his right-brained exercises, he says, imagine that there's a stream, and let's call it your mind. It's the infinite mind of the universe. And in that stream, thoughts are like boats. The boat of that friend from high school, there he is. He says, the main thing, when you learn to practice stillness, is that you don't want to jump in the boats. Here's the boat of an old girlfriend. I remember Alfreda, the first wife that Greg, I married her in the Baptist church. I knew it was doomed from the time we went into that Baptist church. You know, you can't put new wine in old wineskins, and I think we were trying to do it at that time. You've got to have a new wineskin. You have to have a new belief system, don't you, Ashley? You can't hold on to the old wineskin because the new wine doesn't have a place to go. So what if in this ocean of life, we get to be the witness of the thought patterns that are there? I can mention Bernie Sanders. Let's jump in the Bernie Sanders boat. I can mention Donald Trump. We'll dump in the Donald Trump boat. Or not. We could just float down that river and not jump in any boat. Wow. Imagine how free we would be. Then you know what would happen to those boats, those thought patterns? They'd just float on down the river. And we're free. We're in the ocean of love. We're in the ocean of life. And we don't need to jump in any boats anymore. Anybody respect that? So here we are. Yeah, Carlos Castaneda, I said in the program today, he says, whatever path you're on, if your path doesn't have heart, it's not worth anything. So is your path a path of the heart? Jody's ministry is rescuing animals. And every time she talks about it, my heart just opens because I know that she's found that right and perfect path for her. So what if we ask the question, where does the Holy Spirit arise within us and give us meaning? Now, I use that word Holy Spirit because I've been kind of Rorized, is that the word? He uses that idea a lot, the Holy Spirit. And he says when we can take this idea of God, the Trinity, the Father, which is the infinite presence of the universe, the Son, which is you and me, is physical manifestation, and it's in everything, not just in humanity, in everything. And then the Holy Spirit is the way it flows. It flows through all of us. It sings through us. It paints through us. It plays the guitar through us. It, you know, it imagines through us. They were asking, I've been listening to Richard Rohr, and he talks about one of his great inspirations being a Franciscan monk was a man named Teilhard de Chardin. And Teilhard de Chardin, he says, was a crazy seven. Anybody resemble that? He was a crazy seven who talked about the Christification of humanity and how it's not about Jesus the Christ, the last name of Jesus. No, it's about the cosmic Christ that arises within all of us. Could we let our spiritual path be something bigger than a narrow wineskin that doesn't serve us anymore? Then you become an ex-evangelist, like my dear friend Ashley over here. You stop believing in the letter of the law, and you leap into the spirit of the law, which is so much greater. So you probably figured this out. I am all about the ministry of the heart. I studied with Sadhguru, too. He's all about the Kundalini energy, the Isha Foundation, rising up. And I realized after a couple of years that wasn't really the path for me. I had to go to the path of the heart, which I found through a Sufi teacher, Llewellyn von Lee. And this is called The Heart of Sufism. Is this microphone working? Okay. And listen what he says. If I can see this. Okay, he says, Sufism is the religion of the heart. The religion in which the thing of primary importance is to seek God in the heart of everything. The religion of the heart, to seek God in the heart of everything. I love what Marie said. She stands up against the trees and she feels the heart of the trees. Wow. To see it in everything. And he says, recognizing, and he says, and there are three ways of seeking God in the human heart. He says, the first way is to recognize that the divine is in everyone. I would change that. I would say the divine is in everything. So the first way to practice the religion of the heart is to see that the divine is in every single thing. He says the second way to experience the religion of the heart is to imagine somebody that is not with us. Now, I can think of my dog, Baby Speck. You can think of your dog. What was his name? Rocky. They're still here. So he says, bring to mind somebody that is not here in form, your beautiful dad. And know that that love is still there. They may not be, art is not here, but the love of art is here. See? And then you begin to experience the second way. And then Hazrat Inayat Khan says the third way is to know that when you feel that impulse of love in your heart, that that is the divine spark of divine love igniting in you. Huh? So anytime we feel loving, that is the divine presence of love awakening within our heart. That's pretty simple, isn't it? And he says, the third way of realizing the Sufi principle is to realize that every impulse of love that rises in a human heart is a direction from God herself. To realize that this love is a divine spark in one's own heart is to blow that spark until the flame may rise and illuminate the path of one's whole life to a path of the heart. Ah. A religion of the heart. And lastly, he quotes a great Sufi saying that said, the heart is the gate of God. And as soon as you knock upon that gate, the answer comes. Well, so if we're going to follow a path of heart, we have to be willing to be a little crazy. Not to have all the answers for the world, for whatever rises. You love that. Isn't that a divine name for a title for a book? Yeah, so the Sufis say, follow the path of the heart. The Buddhists say, follow the path of the heart. In the science of mind, Ernest Holmes says, let love lead the way, and then the law will make the way possible. So what does let love lead the way mean to you in your life? Could you ask your soul that? Because the soul wants to find meaning. It's very interesting in our revealing circle. So many people are trying to find that purpose. Why are they here? What is mine to do? What is mine to be? And so for that, I'm going to dive into this third area. Oh, and Hazrat Inayat Khan also talked about the symbol of Sufism. Now, you know, Jesus was asked about truth and about God and everything, and he said, I speak, but you do not hear. So he would speak in parables. He would speak in symbols. You know, don't cast your pearls before swine. He wasn't talking about your mother's pearls. You know, he was talking about a greater idea for those who can't hear it. Ashley knows what I'm talking about. So you don't cast the pearls before swine. In the Sufi tradition, the yantra is a symbol. These are all yantras of spiritual practices. They're a symbol that is a right brain thing to help communicate. Like, for instance, the symbol of the cross is the vertical reality of the eternal now moment crossing into time-space reality. And at that moment where it intersects is the sacred now moment, right? That's what that symbol means. It's not the object upon which Jesus died. It's a much deeper realization. So the Sufi symbol is the second from the end over there. You don't have to look at it. Beautiful Virginia Burroughs created it. But it's a winged heart. Remember the path of the heart. It's a winged heart. So they recognize that this religion of the heart, it moves through the heart space, and on either side of the heart is a wing, so that it is an earthbound and heavenly bound. It's not restricted to form or the invisible essence that's everywhere around us. And in that heart, there is a crescent moon. Remember, this is kind of a Muslim thing, and there is the star. The star represents the spark of the divine, and the crescent moon represents our receptivity as a reflection of the very thing that we are all reflections of, this divine love. So in other words, the allness of God is not me, but I am an aspect of God, just like you are an aspect of God, just like the wave on the ocean is an aspect of the ocean of love. Not the allness of love, because you're all waves on that ocean. And when you let go of your wave nature and you fall back into your original nature, then we're all the same. We're all one big puddle of love, and the individualized aspect, in a way, is the illusion. So, lastly, the last path of the heart that I want to talk about is this path of the Franciscan monk, Richard Rohr, which would be the path of St. Francis of Assisi. And St. Francis is a wonderful poem that I had, but I didn't bring it. It's called St. Francis and the Pig. And St. Francis was walking down the streets, and he saw this pig, and he started telling the pig how lovely the pig was, with all the flaws that the pig had. And at the end of the poem, basically, are we here to tell each one how lovely you are, how lovely you are? Even the pig is lovely. And our job here is to tell the world how lovely it is. I've been telling that little pug how precious he is, with his underbite, with his bump, with all of his flaws, that he is the most beautiful pug. And I find myself singing a Karen Drucker song to him. I will be gentle with my pug. I will be gentle with my pug, and I'll hold my pug like a newborn baby child. And I'll only go as fast as the slowest part of him feels safe to go. Yes, I'll only go as fast as the slowest part of him feels safe to go, because I will be gentle with my pug. And in that, I'm gentle with myself. So Richard Rohr talks about St. Francis, and he said St. Francis saw the humility was the way that God enters into humanity. Not through arrogance, not through pride, but through humility. And so he recognized that it's through the poor. And St. Francis, he says, married Dame Poverty. There's a painting of St. Francis marrying Dame Poverty. He was with the lepers and the cripples and the people that had no money. And even in his lifetime in the 12th century, he would go into villages and they would cheer him on when he would walk into the village with his donkey. So he hired a man to scream, you're no good, you're unworthy. Seems counterintuitive for a religious scientist, does it? But he didn't want to get hubris. He didn't want to have pride. He wanted to stay humble, because just like the crescent moon, when we're humble, we can be receivers of grace. We can be receivers of divine love. I of myself can do nothing. It's this loving presence within that does the work. So the path of a mystic, and this is a mystical teaching, says that God is a direct experience. It's not an object. It's not a concept. It's not something that we get to understand with our minds, but something we get to directly experience with our hearts. And sometimes the heart needs to be broken open a little bit so that that love can flow. So Richard Rohr says, in the Franciscan path of the heart, he says there's the four great separations that we have to transcend. He says the first separation happened when you were very little, when you separated yourself from your mother and you saw that there were two instead of one. I had a twin sister. She calls us wombmates. We were wombmates. And we were we were like one, until I realized that she got pink birthday cake and I got a green birthday cake. I wanted a pink birthday cake too. So I realized, I guess at three, that I'm going to be stuck with the green cake and she gets the pink cake. I've always loved pink. It's my favorite. Anyway, you know, that must have been a sign way back when. So the first split is where you realize there's two and not one. And that's the first split that has to be transcended. He says the second split happened when you're maybe a little child and you experienced death. When I was a little boy, we would get turtles at the five and dime, those little turtles, and we'd get a little cage, and that turtle would maybe live a month. I had so many turtles buried in the backyard, it wasn't even funny. And so I got to realize there's life and there's death. And that's the second split. He says the third split comes along a little bit later when we separate the mind from the body. We think that the mind is superior to the body, and the body is just something that we manage, control, and that it's sometimes an inconvenience, sometimes it's an element of addiction, but we separate the mind from the body, and that's the third split that's inaccurate. And he says the fourth split is where we move into the binary mind, what Richard Rohr calls the binary mind. This is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong, my way versus your way. And in those four areas, he says, we suffer. So the awakened heart transcends all of those splits. You recognize that there aren't two here. There's only one here. There's only one life, and we're it. Boy, can you imagine how compassionate we would be as a species if we realized this whole planet was our life? That the fish and the dolphins and the polar bears and the North Sea and the koala bears, they're all us. You know, then you think twice about using pesticides sometimes, and you kind of, I don't know, you get ladybugs to eat the aphids. They're all living in a kind of harmony and homeostasis. It's all us. The second mistake, he says, is you realize that death and life, they're together. We're dying daily. Throughout this whole book, he talks about the willingness, the path that Jesus was showing, remember, as an archetypal path, was dying to the false self and awakening to true nature. So we die daily, it says in the Bible, to be born again in this Christ consciousness. It says in the Quran, die before you die. We're dying to a false sense of self, the limited self that thinks it's separate. So life and death are inextricably in a beautiful dance because spirit never dies. The form goes. So in the Hazrat Inayat Khan thing, when you can remember somebody who's no longer here in form, they're still here. Michael gave me a beautiful gift on my birthday. It's a lamp that Tessa, his beautiful girlfriend, made. And it's amber colored. And every time I plug in that lamp, I feel Tessa with me. And I vaguely remember seeing her and you in the church, but I feel her presence every time I light that little lamp. And what if that's what it's all about? When I see Greg, I see Girl Dog, and I probably will always see Girl Dog when I see you. He'd ride around in that truck, and she'd sit there in the passenger side, and the two of them looked like a little team. Life and death go together, and there is no death in truth. The only thing that dies is the idea, the form, the boat, if you want. Anybody have a few boats that they no longer, it's a dead boat? You'll see that boat on the water, and you don't get back in it? That's freedom. To die to an old resentment, an old boyfriend or girlfriend that was the boat of your resentment and your contention, and you're no longer getting in that resentment boat. You're no longer bitter. You see them moving down the river and you say, hey, have a nice journey. I wish you the best on your next encounter along the road of life. So the second one, there's no birth and death. And the third one is to put the body back into the whole thing with the mind. To know that they're not separate. Yeah, so I remember when I would see people, and I remember Jane Stern. She was so angry at her body because her legs wouldn't move. And just like with Greg, I said, you got to love your heart. I said to Jane, when her legs wouldn't work, I said, Jane, you got to love your legs. You know, the body and the mind, it needs to be all integrated in one beautiful sense of wholeness. We're not separate. And then what's so amazing when we do our generational healings, and Gloryji's a master at this, and so was Gangaji, you begin to listen to the body. So instead of when the body is sending you a message, or there's an emotion that's arising, that's a sacred emotion, that's a sacred message that the body can communicate. The body never lies. Sometimes the head gets deluded and thinks it has the right way, and it wants to treat things away, but the body doesn't want that. The body says, no, you're going to listen. Your heart is breaking. What is your heart telling you? You know, you're feeling a deep pain. Could we be willing to open to that bigger pain, knowing that we're really here to take on the pain of humanity? It's not just my pug, it's all animals, it's all humans, it's all confusion. Wow. Then the body of the earth is screaming for us to embrace it. Head and body, not separate. And lastly, he talks about this duplicitous little mind that wants to say this is right and this is wrong. So could we get past that idea that our shadow is something that we need to exile. I loved it. Richard Rohr said in the Franciscan path, he says, we don't chase after the light. We turn toward the darkness because the darkness is the area. The light is within the darkness, but the darkness comprehendeth it not. So once we enter into the darkness with a willingness to be attentive, to be vigilant, which is probably the hardest thing on the spiritual path, is to be vigilant. When something arises within us, it's not a bad something. It's a necessary something that's coming up to be met, to be seen, to be held, to be embraced. That's the path of the heart, to embrace what is. Let me just give you a little taste of Richard at the end of the book. He talks about one of his practices is cultivating heart attention. And he says, when we go to experience the inner connection to the presence, he says the inner connection is often called the heart, where we have to yield in order to experience any further depths, to yield to the wisdom of the heart. He says learning best happens when calmness and inner safety reside. Then with practice, something taking years to develop, sometimes occurring in the instant, he says we can find our way into this heart presence even in the midst of great turbulence. In the midst of great turbulence, I think about what I went through the last 2 weeks. I could feel that my heart was just expanding in that whole time when my head was frustrated as hell, couldn't do anything other than to love the pug. The practice of silence is ongoing, and it's never perfectly mastered. And he says, every time we lose this inner silence, it's not to be seen as a failure, but as a concrete opportunity to re-choose the silence. The silent mind is the peaceful mind. It has equanimity. It's not jumping into the boat, I've got to fix it, this is wrong, how can I escape it? No, no. It's the silent mind, the peaceful mind, that has the equanimity that this is here for me. And lastly, he says, let us then know from our open heart. Not about the open heart. Let us know from this open heart. So the open heart is speaking. Not the clever mind, not the one that has all the answers, the engineer in all of us, no. The part of us that's humbled enough to say, I don't have a clue, but I know that if I open my heart, that heart has a wisdom all its own. He said, place your attention within this open heart and observe, notice, and sense the qualities of this heart space. Now, this is a request. This is a question. Observe the heart space within yourself. He says, you will know that you have entered it because it will feel as if you are within a vast spherical space where you cannot find a boundary, a beginning, or an ending. It's the heart of the universe, and you're in it. So he's inviting you into that heart space. He said it is a feeling of both intimate infinity and infinite intimacy. Don't you love that? Infinite intimacy and intimate infinity. To be intimate with the infinite. Wow. He said there is a warmth, and it is all warmth. And you feel encompassed and held and embraced, and you find that you are within the heart rather than the heart being inside you. This is called panentheism in this teaching of ours. In other words, we are in the heart of God, and the heart of God is within us. Could you know yourself as being in the heart of God, in the heart of humanity? And of course, in the Franciscan way, they say, and when we are humbled, when we are cracked open, then that presence can flow even more fully. Because we're not in charge. We're not the fixer. We don't have the answers. Seamus wrote a beautiful poem revealing that we think we're safe and secure and we have all the strategies, and then something happens and we get to surrender to that which has been holding us all along. He says, when you feel this expansive warmth, you can let it resonate through your body until perfect calm comes. Just allow it to let this presence resonate through your body, this open-hearted awareness that we all share. Feel the inherent, always present blessing. And then he says, return again and again and again. We fall from grace. We go off on our little paths. We think we're in charge. Our heart gets broken. We're struggling with all the stuff that life brings us. But then return. Return to that open-hearted awareness. Return to that peace that passes all understanding. Return to the I don't know place. Yeah. Return to the emptiness. Return to the nothingness. And then find the everythingness in the nothingness. We did a inquiry practice in our lovely class, and Phyllis asked us the question, who am I, about 30 times. And I realized every time I went deeper into that question, I'm the space in which everything arises. I am nothing and yet I'm everything. You know, I am the love that I've been seeking and I am the love that is expressing. I am the one heart of the universe. Not in this little local heart. Yes, this wonderful little local heart, but it's part of something so much greater and we're all the same. I'm you, you are me, we are one. We sing this every Sunday. How profound is that? There's only one here. Yeah, so he says, feel this inherent, always present blessing and return again and again and again. It's always there. It never went anywhere. And it never really goes away from you, he said. You only go away from it. It never goes away from you. You go away from it. You go away from it. Someone, some well-meaning soul, hand-wrote a poem by Mary Oliver, and they stuck it on my desk. It's a little love note, and she's a wonderful poet. And I've read it so many times, but I thought I'd read it to you because Mary Oliver would see God in everything, and she would see nature as this beautiful gospel that's always praying. And what is prayer but the contemplation of everything with this open-hearted awareness? You talk about the path of the heart. That's what her little poem is. And it's called, It Happened to Me Standing. And she says, I don't know where prayers go or what prayers do. Do cats pray, she asked, while they sleep, half asleep in the sun? Does the possum pray as it crosses the street? She said, those sunflowers, the old black oak that's growing older every year. I know I can walk through the woods and along the shore and walk under the trees. And with my mind filled with things of little importance, in full self-attendance, a condition I cannot really call being alive. If I'm caught up in my thoughts, and they're going on and on and on, she says. That's my part of it. Is a prayer a gift, she says, or is it a petition? Or does it even really matter, she asks. She said, the sunflowers blaze. Maybe that's the way God prays. Maybe the cat is not really asleep. Maybe she is praying or she's purring, and maybe not. She says, while I was thinking this, I happened to be standing just outside my door with my notebook open. And she said, which is the way I begin every single morning, like Seamus, with her notebook open. And then a wren in the spirit begins to sing. It was positively directed. He was positively distracted in his enthusiasm for life, this little wren. I don't know why, and yet, why not? I wouldn't persuade you from whatever you believe or whatever you don't believe. That's your business. But I thought of this wren's singing. What could this be if this isn't a prayer? I thought of this wren singing to his full throttle. What would this be if this isn't a prayer? So I just listened, and my pen was in the air. Mary Oliver, I just listened, and the pen was in my air. The path of the heart, to open to the song of a bird, to stand by a tree and feel its heartbeat with your heartbeat, to look into the eyes of a friend and to see your own self reflected, to hold a pug in your arms when he's shaking like a leaf, knowing that you can't fix him, but you can embrace him and hold him. What if that's all a prayer? That's all the path of the heart. So let me just do a little meditation. So when we come to the Center for Spiritual Living, we're entering into a heart space. I'm very clear on that now. The heart knows oneness, where the head oftentimes gets caught up in duplicitous thinking. And so we unhook from the mind, the bilateral mind, the one that has right and wrong, good and bad, your way, my way. We unhook from that, and we allow the attention to move into the sanctuary of the heart. I love the word sanctuary, because it's a sacred place where we can discover and intuit and ponder the imponderable. The mind wants to have answers and understand, but the heart wants to discover the meaning in everything. So as we take up residence in the heart space, and we choose to allow life to teach us through the many experiences that we have, they're all here for us. Richard Rohr talks about when the heart space awakens, we experience truth, beauty, and all goodness. The truth, that is incontrovertible, that is not related to the facts of life, but that awakens within the heart. The beauty that sees beauty in the smallest of things. Meister Eckhart said, he who can see beauty in the smallest of things is better than seeing an angel. And so we open to this heart space that can see beauty, even a little pug's face with one eye, a lump on his head, and an underbite. We see beauty in that little black pug. Truth, beauty, and all goodness. When this all goodness arises, we realize that everything is good. Everything is God. Even the stuff that seems not good is here as a part of the transformation, as a part of the awakening. And so when everything is held in that embrace, in that sanctuary of the heart, it offers up its gift. And sometimes the gift is hard to discover at first. But if we stay with that pain, with that confusion, with that broken open place, we realize that we're open. How beautiful is that? We realize that that confusion was necessary until it wasn't. And then a beautiful clarity began to emerge out of the fog of the mind. I can see clearly now. My painful thinking is gone. What once seemed to be an ugly scenario, we can find a strange kind of beauty. The last 2 weeks with Humphrey has been some of the most beautiful time for me. As painful and as confused as I was, I can see beauty in this whole dance. When I was 21, a young man shared his philosophy on life when he said, a happy person will see beauty in the same place that an unhappy person sees ugliness. We can choose what perspective we're going to have. He said, I am beautiful. You are beautiful. The whole existing universe is beautiful. Ugliness is merely a manifestation of unhappiness. And so we move into that space where everything is beautiful in its own way. It sounds like a lyric to a song, doesn't it? And in that, we find truth, beauty, and goodness arising within the heart, the sanctuary of the heart, the path of the heart. And we take that next inevitable step, just like Humphrey's doing, and we trust that there is this power that will lift him up and move him forward. It's the same power that moves you and I forward in life. And when we surrender into that, everything is a miracle. It's with so much gratitude for the wisdom of the heart, for the community of heart, and for the ever unfolding grace of this heart within the human body that we merge together as that one life, that one heart, that one love, with peace, compassion, kindness, and joy, all unfolding with ease and grace and playfulness. Thank you, Humphrey, for your beautiful gift. Now raise your hands in the air, wiggle your little fingers, send that energy out into the universe. That's what we are. Oh, it looks so beautiful when you do that. Yeah. Let it shine, let it shine, let it shine. And so it is.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. You create a brand new